Welcome to Life Without Secrets. Do you often find yourself comparing your life to your friends on social media? You see the glamour, the success, the perfect family, the perfect kids, the awesome vacations. But what's really behind the highlight reel? In Life Without Secrets, we are going to dive deep and reveal the secrets, struggles, and strategies people have used in real life to get to who they are now and who they are becoming. Because the truth is, nobody is perfect. And you are never alone in what you're going through. So don't forget to subscribe to the show because it's time to connect on a deeper level and grow together.
Today's guest is a man of many talents, from his days in law enforcement to the CIA, that's credit, income, and assets. But what truly sets him apart is his commitment to service, leadership, and making a positive impact in the world. He's a financial advocate, a passionate entrepreneur, and a champion for serving others as a reputable solar energy provider. And above all of that, he's a loving husband, a great dad, and someone who believes in the power of transformation. Today, we're going to dive into an incredible man's journey, his passions, and his vision for a brighter future. And if you haven't already guessed, because if you're watching the YouTube channel, you probably can see him. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest for today's episode, my husband, Michael Riddell. Hey, babe. Welcome to Life Without Secrets.
Hey, guys.
So I feel like it's been a little while since we've done a Monday episode. Last year, we were doing a Monday episode every week since like February. Mm-hmm. He'd come on here with me and we would share our relationship, the struggles in our relationships, tools that we've used to overcome them because we've been through a lot of therapy. We've taken a lot of courses. We've had a lot of teachers in our lives, mentors in our lives that have helped guide us. And, you know, we have now developed, I have a program called Love Without Secrets. And if you haven't checked it out, you can go to my website, lifewithoutsecrets.com, and you can click on courses to take a look at the course, or you can type in your email and get a free magazine because my Truthful magazine just came out. But I wanted to let you in on his story a little bit more because we did talk a lot about our relationship, but we didn't really talk too much. We touched on it about your story, but like you do a lot and you do a lot in leadership. Like my husband is pretty incredible. And I feel like we don't know enough about you on the podcast. And I highlight all these people. And I was thinking about you need to have your own spotlight on here because I watch you lead so many people and transform so many people's lives and what you do. And so I really wanted our audience to get to know you from kind of an earlier stage and tell you what you do now and how you lead people. So before we get into that, though, should we just tell them really quick about the event we just went to?
Mm-hmm. A lot of fun.
This is like Life Without Secrets after dark, by the way, because we literally just got back from Amberly Lago's Unstoppable Success Summit. We literally just got back home. We put our kids to bed and I was like, we have to do a podcast because I want to highlight you. And I want to also talk about the event because it was incredible. I just want to touch on it really quick. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite part about it?
Well, I think first off, you're going to speak for yourself because tired is a mindset.
Oh, geez.
I think that we all have to understand that for me, right, when we turn it on and we get to this point, like we just went the whole weekend, all fired up.
Yeah.
Excited. And, you know, the great part about this event is not only is this our first, actually, it's our third, what is it, our third, our second or third event that we went to with Amberly.
It's her second event that we've been through, but we've been to other events with her.
What I think is the most powerful thing about it is just how amazing it is that she steps up, she's leading, mm-hmm. and she's pulling people out of, I call it the grandstands. She's pulling people out of the grandstands mm-hmm. and putting them on the stage to lead and get in the game, you know yeah. what I mean? Which is amazing because, you know, there's a lot of people in life that want to cheer on the sidelines. They want to be in the grandstands and they want to mm-hmm. watch everybody else and cheer them on. But you know, what's powerful about what Amber Lee's doing is she's pulling people literally from the grandstands and mm-hmm. inviting them with love, care, compassion to go and just go after their dreams. And that's what, you know, you've been able to be a part of her mastermind for the last couple of years. And it's watching what you've done, you know, it's been incredible. So the mastermind for me was just incredible. I got to sit back, watch it, see everybody that's growing, see yourself that's just crushing it.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible.
Yeah. And I think for me, like one of my favorite things is that for sure. And then also being in an environment where like everybody is encouraging everybody and women are empowering women, right? We can get into this comparison game. We can, you know, be fearful about what we're doing because somebody else is doing it. We can say, oh, I'm not enough. I'm not that good. But, you know, just like you're saying, she pulls them out from, you know, just from the sidelines and puts them in the field and shows them the belief and the possibility of what their life could look like. And it doesn't matter where you came from, what your story is. You have a story and your story matters, and you have something to teach the world and you have something to give the world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really powerful when you have a group of people, and it, for us, it's a group of women in the mastermind that literally cheer each other on. There's no jealousy. We just want every single one of those women to lead the way for others and succeed and impact the world. And it's so nice to be around people that share that dream with you, because we all need people to believe in us on those days that, you know, we're having a hard time believing in ourselves. And we do have those days, right? And you're saying tired is a mindset. Well, I actually will disagree. Can you tell we're married? And it can be a mindset, right? Like you can get stuck in a tired mindset, but it's also because like your tank is empty, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can go on here and develop the energy because we're passionate about this. Mm-hmm. We're passionate about helping people. We're passionate about sharing our experience because we want people to come to events like this with us. We want people to come with us on this journey and grow together. That's what we're here to do. And you know, I wish I could just bring everybody with me, you know? And I think like, if you've never been to an event like that, growing yourself and just learning more to develop yourself personally, like I highly recommend try it on, right? Try it on. It's just like when you go to Nordstrom and try on that new outfit, you don't know what it looks like on you until you try it on. Like go try it on, because I promise you, you won't regret it. I used to actually be that person, and we can get into it, but I used to be that person that like Mike was started doing personal development before me, and he would come back from events and I didn't go with him. And I would be like, oh gosh, yeah, everything's so positive. And I would really struggle with it actually. And I was really just miserable in my own state that I was in. And I wasn't filling my own cup at the time. And so I wore a lens of like resentment, and I saw the negative, you know. And John Gordon, you know, at the event was talking about how 80% of our thoughts are negative. Mm-hmm. And so if 80% of our thoughts are negative, just like every day, mm-hmm. we have to really choose those wisely, right? And the ones that we believe, mm-hmm. you know, about ourselves. So it's really awesome to have other people to cheer you on, to believe in you too, you know, mm-hmm. and to give you more of those positive thoughts when you're having a rough day, you know, and that will increase your energy and make you want to go after the things in your life that you'd never even knew you were capable of. So I just wanted to quickly touch on that event because I watch it happen and it's just so magical. And I honestly just feel so blessed that I get to be a part of that, like that I get to be somebody on the stage that goes, look, guys, if I can do this, you can do it too. And come on the journey. It wasn't something that I ever planned necessarily. I stepped into it. It's like, you know, when the platform comes, jump on the platform, you know, and see where it takes you. You don't have to do the same thing every single day. Like try new things, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. One thing that I'll just talk about, and I talk to the guys a lot about this at work. And
yeah, I want to go into your story.
Really teaching people that life right now is understanding how important it is that you get in the right environment. Mm-hmm. Right. And realistically, right now, you're either like the world, which is a bucket of crabs, right? Have you ever heard of the bucket of crabs analogy?
Yeah, you've told us, I think. Tell us again. I can't remember.
So the bucket of crabs analogy is you get a bucket of crabs. Mm-hmm. And essentially, as soon as one of the crabs starts to get out of the bucket, maybe gets, you know, almost out or pretty close, every single crab will do everything they can to grab onto that crab and rip him back down, pull him back down, right? So the idea is to get in an environment where people are lifting you up, right? Mm-hmm. Cheering you on, chanting mm-hmm. you on, not to be in that bucket of crabs, which is, you know, the analogy of what most people are dealing with in today's world.
Yeah, that is so true. So I want you to be like, I know we can sit here and chat forever about mm-hmm. different things, but I really wanted to take the time for everybody to learn about your journey.
Mm-hmm.
I also, at the end of this, stay tuned because we're going to ask each other some fun questions at the end too. But I really want to just go into your story.
Okay.
I want to know what your journey has been like. Maybe, you know, some of the things we've talked about, like in our relationship story and things, but just a pivotal moment and why you do what you do now and share about what you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, where do you want me to start?
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, start from when we met. Like, you don't have to share the story because they can go listen to it on the episode of when we met, or how you grew up. Why did you become a police officer? What led you to becoming a police officer when you were really
mm-hmm.
young?
Mm-hmm. Interesting story. You know, for me, you know, I grew up with, you know, my dad, who was literally the hardest worker I still to this day have probably ever met. Very hard worker. And, you know, at 5 years old, my mom ended up moving out to Utah. So she left to Utah. So I was being raised most of the time by my dad. I'd spend, you know, a couple of months in the summer with my mom and, you know, really understanding, you know, what success was, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, I didn't really know. And, you know, I grew up in a very small town. I joke with people and I say, you know, the high school I went to, we had like 50, 60 people in the graduating class and I was top 10. You know? Something to brag about. You know, but growing up, a lot of people in my hometown were, I mean, to be frank with you, you know, started drinking at young ages.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only thing to do. And I watched a lot of my friends and people start to experiment with different drugs, mm-hmm. Pills, you know, marijuana, different mm-hmm. things. For me, I was into girls probably pretty young, like 14, 15, you know, 13, 14 years old. It's like, oh, you know,
I'm already trying to show off for them, huh?
So what I knew is I needed to get a car. I needed to have, you know.
Yeah, you got to look good for the girls. Take them on their date.
I had to have money. So I started working at a really young age. I think my first job was probably at like 11 years old. And, you know, I started doing like, I was pruning trees in an apple orchard. I'd work all weekend, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd put in as many hours as I could because I was making like, I think it was $7.50 an hour when I was doing that. And it was really cool though, because I got to learn how to save up money. I got to learn how to do different things. So for me, I knew that I wanted to just keep, you know, obviously going down that ladder. So 16 years old, I bought my first car, right? Actually 15 years old, I bought my first car, right? And then 16, I got my license the day of, right?
Mm-hmm. I did too.
I don't think too many kids nowadays have that mm-hmm. drive, you know, that it's like, hey, I want on 16th birthday, I wanted mm-hmm. to have, I was mm-hmm. literally sitting in the parking lot of the DMV like, mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing on my 16th birthday. So I got my driver's license. And then, you know, fast forward a couple years, graduated high school, you know, and when I graduated, I told myself I didn't know what I wanted to do, right? So I started doing, you know, a couple of different things. I ended up getting my personal training certificate. I don't even know if I've told you that.
I'm like, I don't know if you did either.
Yeah, I got my personal training certificate because I thought, hey, I loved working out. I really have had fell in love with just the process of different things like, hey, mm-hmm. I can put my head to this and I could do it. So I started putting my head down and I went on my first ride along at like 19 years old.
How did you get that ride along? Like, did you call somebody?
You know, I don't even remember.
No, remember?
I think I just started calling. I maybe called the police department. I really don't remember, but I got some crazy stories. Like before doing this, I ran from the cops, stupid stuff.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Like
yeah.
Just dumb stuff.
Tell us about that story.
So I used to go with a couple of buddies of mine. I won't drop any names on here that we would go and they had like trophy trucks and they would like in back where we came from, there was, you know, trucks that we could just Baja through the desert. And they had all these trucks that they could Baja through the desert. I had a Ford Explorer. Well, they would literally blow the stop sign in town, stupid stuff.
There was only one stop sign, by the way.
The stop sign. You guys heard that, right? So we would like literally, a couple of times we would get like lit up by the cops and we just gas on it. And like, they would never catch us. We'd blow through the desert and it was an adrenaline rush, right? Well, one of the pivotal moments, and you talk about a pivotal moment, is I'm literally driving. It must have been like midnight. And I had a lot of speeding tickets. That was one of the things that I almost didn't get in as a cop I had like 3 speeding tickets before I was like 21.
Nothing's changed.
But what's crazy is one time when I was like 18 years old, I was driving. I wasn't drinking, I wasn't drinking or anything. I was just driving and I saw this cop turn around. I was like, oh no. So I tried to go through the desert in my Ford Explorer. And I literally got stuck. I got stuck and this cop came up and I'm just going to, for, PG purposes, he came up with his gun drawn on me and like, are you stupid? He just yelled at me. Like, I was like, wow. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to jail. I thought I was in big trouble.
Yeah. Cops 1, Microdell 0.
Yes. Yes. So anyways, long story short, I was sitting there and he got a call. He got some other call and he grabbed my ID and I showed him in. He's like, what are you doing? And I pretty much was like, I don't know.
I don't know.
And he literally got a call and he looked at me and he goes, it's your lucky day. And at that moment I was like, wow, this is like one of those just defining moments where I was like, oh man, I've got to figure out what I want to do with my life. A year later is when I went on a ride along. Obviously no mention of that incident. It's not on my record or anything like that.
Yeah.
But what's crazy about it is I went on my first ride along at 19 years old and all of my buddies were starting to go down different paths where they're doing like steroids or, you know what I mean? Like just stupid stuff at 19 years old that kids do. And I went on a ride along and I couldn't believe that these guys were getting paid $25 an hour to go out and literally chase down bad guys, drive 80, 90 miles an hour. And I'm like, dude, I want to do this. So at that point, I put my head down and I said, hey, I want to do this. And I knew that if I did any drugs, I couldn't become a cop. So for me, I completely cut that off. I was like, hey, you know what? I know for a fact I'm not going to do any drugs. Mm-hmm. So I could still tell you to this day, I've never smoked marijuana. And it's interesting because, everybody's like, what? Really? I've never even wanted to try it. No, I've never even really wanted to try it, like truthfully. But from that standpoint, I put my head down. 20 years old, I applied to, because you have to be 21 to be, you have to be 21. You have to turn 21 to get into the police academy. Mm-hmm. So at 20 years old, I got hired on. I was going through the police department. I went through the background with Anaheim PD and with LAPD. And LAPD was crazy because they actually grilled me like really hard. They grilled me on the drug question. And I knew that, I'd been in a lot of fights and like a bunch of different things, but they were grilling me like, no, it's evident you've used drugs within the lie detector test. And I'm like, nope. So anyways, they said I quote unquote failed the LAPD polygraph test. I don't know if I told you that
either. Yeah, I think I already remember that.
Yeah. And anyways, the next day I had a conversation with the background investigators with NIPD. And I told them what I thought about the polygraph test. I was like, I don't think it's right. I did this and they're telling me I'm lying. So they're like, hey, listen, if we put you on this polygraph test, you'll fail. Come back 2 weeks from now. You're going to be fine. Just, calm down, relax, we'll go from there. So talk about like a wish, what I mean? I'm like, man, I want to freaking become a cop. So I'm one of 1,000 candidates, by the way. Right. Wow. So when
this is way before 2020, by the way.
Yeah. This is in 2007.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So by going through that, like I just put my head down, like they said, hey, you need to be able to run a mile and a half. So I just started training, like I'm going to be the fastest at running this mile and a half. Right. You got to be able to do X amount of pushups, whatever. So I did that. And the physical fitness part. Right. So I ended up getting into the police academy. 6 months was a police academy. I kid you not, in the first, it looks like I'm this God's gift to earth, but it was literally two weeks into the police academy. I'll tell you the first week, another defining moment in my life. First week into the police academy, I kid you not, I think I slept less than 4 hours in 5 or 6 days because they kept us up the whole week.
Oh, gosh.
Then when we would go home, we had to write these RARs, they're memorandums. You have to write like police reports, but you have to write them perfectly. But my handwriting was horrible. So I'd write them and then I would fluff it up and it's supposed to be like really simple. And they would just red ink them up and they would send me home. So I'd not only have to do one the first day, then I had to do two the second day, then I had to do three the third day, and I had to rewrite them all.
Oh man, and I've seen how fast you read.
Yeah, I'm a horrible reader.
Everything we do together, he's like, you read it.
Yes. Yes.
You're not horrible. It's just, it's like, it's a little slow.
I failed my first couple of tests in the police academy. Mm-hmm. And basically you get one chance to remediate them. And the first couple I failed, and literally I couldn't believe it, but every single test that I retook, I would actually pass, crazy enough. And I just put my mind to it and I'm like, hey, I'm not giving up. So it would look like, and you know, everybody that knows me doesn't even hear these stories because it was like, I had to work 10 times harder than anybody else, but it became my identity. And it's really what's blessed me from there on out because I watched my dad work really hard. And then I went through the police academy. I graduated the police academy number two in my class, which is crazy, right? Number one, I got the award for arrest and control and physical fitness. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy about that is like, I went into police work as easy as I can put it, like saying I wanted to be the chief of police, right? It was 2 years in as a police officer where I was like narcotics, gangs, mm-hmm. you know, and everything like that. And I was so like gung-ho, like mm-hmm. I was just that.
And that's really when I met you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was that person that was just so gung-ho, like so fired up about life, mm-hmm. like unwavering confidence.
Yeah.
You know, and I ended up going out to a bar down in San Diego.
Oh gosh, I don't know. That was probably like 3 years into our relationship.
Yeah, probably 23 years old, 24.
No, you were probably like 26.
25, 26.
Yeah.
So anyways, I got into a fight at a bar and I got knocked out. I don't know what happened. There was cameras in the club or in this nightclub that we went out to. And all of a sudden, nothing. They wouldn't release any of the cameras, any of that stuff. So I got my bell rung in this bar fight, and it was at that point where I got scolded for that incident mm-hmm. from the police department. And I, you know, kind of put my, how do you put it? Like I put my tail between my legs and I took my beatings. I got my first experience of mm-hmm. politics. You know what I mean? It was like, hey, you know, and rightfully so, like mm-hmm. I was being young, dumb, and you know what yeah. I mean? And I was out and got into a brawl with our buddies in the bar. And you know what's crazy about that is it really opened my eyes to who I was. And you know, I stayed being a cop for probably the next 4 years.
Yeah,
4 years. But I knew that I didn't want to promote. I knew that I didn't want to be in the force for a long time. And I started looking into entrepreneurship. So it's that point mm-hmm. where I started really taking some of my off days and I started taking the money I was making, putting it into, we built a car dealership. And
oh yeah. When I met him, he had a side business with the car dealership, mm-hmm. which you would go to the police auctions mm-hmm. and then get the cars and sell yeah. them. So he's really like, and even before that, like even when you were a teenager, you would tell me stories of like really entrepreneurship. So yeah, so you went from police work. Obviously, things happened from there, and I think we've talked some of it on our relationship podcast. Because if you go back to like over a year ago, mm-hmm. February, we kind of share like what that experience was like when he transitioned in his career, which was really, really hard on our relationship. But I want to talk a little bit about, because I think people will really relate to, you know, you went from police work to mortgage initially.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this process, and I'll be honest, like I was selfish in nature, but he also didn't know how to communicate his real feelings. So there was a really big gap in our relationship during that time. Mm-hmm. We did not have the tools in our relationship. We weren't taught them. And, you know, our relationship really suffered. But what I really want people to hear, because I think a lot of people would relate, is that that was like an identity crisis, mm-hmm. I felt like, for you.
Yeah.
right? Like, and I can totally relate because, you know, as a nurse, like, I feel like that is definitely part of my identity. It is just, it's something I'm prideful about. If I'm being honest, I feel like I'm good at it. And I know you were really good at your job.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe what was it like for you? And like, if you could go back, what would you tell yourself or somebody listening that may be going through an identity crisis or like maybe changing jobs and starting new again? And it can be scary.
Mm-hmm. I think we can't just bring them to that point because they got to hear the basic, like the breakdown, right? Where it all happened. It's so for me, right? It was, you know, fast forward, I'm 28 years old now. I'm going through this rigmarole where I'm still in the force, right? I'm in a bad environment, right? And this is me looking at it from 10 years past this. I'm in a bad environment. I'm seeing not great leadership. I'm seeing a lot of infidelity. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, just young guys, cops, just it is what it is. And that's what I'm being influenced by. You know what I mean? People are imprisoning me by who they define me to be, right? Mike, you're the, you know, you're crazy, you're partier, you're, you know, whatever, right? And from that standpoint, it was, I walked up to you in a country concert, and we did talk about this, but I want to just refresh people, right? Yeah. And I tell people, like, you want to hear that gut chuck moment when you walk up to your wife, or she was my fiance at the time, because I had proposed to her, and I had lipstick on my face. And that night did not end well. Right. That night ended up turning into a night that actually changed the trajectory of my life forever. And I say that because I don't say that lightly. And I say that with passion. I say that if that night never happened, I wouldn't be the man I am today. And it's that those are the things that I
need. A relationship wouldn't be what it is today.
Oh, facts. Right. Because you're the woman I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. You left me that night. And it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me because I made a conscious decision after that to get back to Christ, to get back to church, surrender my life to the Lord, and really go after something bigger for my life. And, you know, a lot of people be like, oh, Mike, keep being a cop, keep doing this. And I knew at the time, or should I say, I knew something bigger was there for me. And a lot of people, you know, I got to a point where I was like, hey, I had the choice to either continue being a cop or walk away from it. And everybody thought I was crazy. They're like, Mike, you're making 150 grand a year as a cop. You got a pension. You're like, you're crazy for walking away from this. But for me, it was a conversation when you talk about identity crisis. I chose to walk away from police work. And when I did walk away from it, you talk about a huge identity crisis. It was like my pride, my ego. And I stepped out of it saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah. I don't know how I'm going to provide for my family, but I'm going to. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to. And it was a choice that I made because of those reasonings. And it was a choice I made, not at the time, not knowing, but it was like, man, like, I thought this was a brotherhood, right? So I got into a point where, fast forward to answer your question now, is where I really felt like my everything got stripped from me, right? It's like taking everything from you. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, you got to fight this boxing match, but we're going to take your right arm, right? We're going to tie it behind your back, and we're going to take your left arm, and we're going to put it up here on your head, and you're going to have to take your right leg, and you're going to, we're going to, you know what I mean? Like, they disabled me. And I told myself, and you know, it's one of those things where I knew that the Lord was with me and he wouldn't forsake me. He would never leave my side. And it's a lot easier said than done, right? But in my toughest, most difficult moments, like, God continued to show up for me. Right. And that's when I got back to really deeper in my relationship with God. And I, 2015, right, I got in, I went all in mortgage. 2016, I had a really breakout year in mortgage and did really well. But what's crazy is I had no clue what I was going to do. Right. And, you know, I coach people on right now how to get out of a 9-to-5 and, you know, hey, do it part time and then coach you on getting out of it. But to be honest with you, like, I burned the boats. The way that I won and the way that I, it sucked. It was really hard for us. Those couple of years, you know what I mean? But I literally was working for, you know, what was it? Probably 15, 16 hour days for, I mean, I hate to admit this, but probably 7 years straight.
Yeah. Well, and just to give you some other context around the situation, when that was happening, we had my son, who Sion was probably what, like between 8 and 10. Mm-hmm. We had Rylan, who was 2, just had turned 2, or mm-hmm. what we had just had her, and it was like starting the process, mm-hmm. but we were really in the thick of it, and you were working so long and just like not really knowing what way was up and what way was down. Rylan was 2. And then I had my youngest, our youngest, Blake, who was 6 weeks early and had to be in the NICU for 2 weeks. And so I had a 2-year-old at home. And then my oldest ended up breaking his leg and had to be in a wheelchair. So I had a double stroller, a wheelchair. My husband works like 16, 18 hour days, is not there. And then like I had to still go back to work. It was a really rough time. Like when I say rough, it was like, how can I escape?
And no help.
Yeah. And yeah. And
I've never given, here's what I pride myself on. And it's probably my pride talking right now.
at least you're aware.
I've never asked anybody for a penny. I've never asked for a handout. I've never, you know.
Yeah. Well, we did have Jenny and she was my lifesaver down
there. And we paid her.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, but she was the best, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, yeah. She was
our nanny.
Yeah, yeah. And she was the best. Like I couldn't have asked for somebody better.
Yeah.
Like I think she really saved us in that area, mm-hmm. but it was really rough. So, but I want to go back to your story. Mm-hmm. You are in mortgage. Can we skip to like where we are now? Because sure. I mean, I want people to know what you do now, how you are leading people. I don't feel like, you know, you even give yourself enough credit for what you do. Mm-hmm. But it is amazing to watch you lead people mm-hmm. in the way that you do. And you really like bring them up and, you know, kind of like what you were saying, right? Like with Amberly, like mm-hmm. at the event and all that stuff, like you do the same stuff in my eyes. Mm-hmm. You literally take people from the sidelines who are just maybe wanting to make a move or change their life or think bigger, and you pull them in the, mm-hmm. the arena with you, you know, and you literally walk next to them.
Well, so let's talk about the conversation around how I got there, right? And I'm just going to keep it more general. You know, for me, right, my thoughts become my reality. And I prayed that God would put the right people in my life. And it's been a revolving prayer that I prayed that God would put the right people in my life to show me, mentor me. And I have visualized, I have mm-hmm. materialized, yes. I've landed the best mentors in the world. And it's not me. God's put them in my path. And mm-hmm. we could sit here all night and talk about how incredibly great God is and how incredibly blessed I've been that God put these people in my path. Just fast forwarding, I went to Saddleback Church, right? And I started listening to the Daily Hope. Daily Hope was my over and over. Like that
we
was,
still actually listen to that every morning.
That was programming me, right, to the truth, right? Because there's either, you know, all of the worldly things and then you have the truth from the mm-hmm. Bible. And from that, I ended up crossing paths with, you know, Chris Poliska, with Ed Milet, mm-hmm. and started working directly with Chris and Ed. Mm-hmm. And then I came across and I started working directly with Edwin mm-hmm. Ariabe. All of these people, huge faith-based guys,
yeah.
right? Incredible leaders, incredible yeah. husbands, incredible fathers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to fast forward to where you're at, right, is I've chosen to be a lifetime student, right? I believe that too many people come in and they're like, oh, I've made it. I'm 30 some odd years old. I'm going into every single situation with a humble heart and really wanting to be mentored, mm-hmm. right? Because there's a drive. Like when you go to mm-hmm. somebody and you tell them, hey, I'm going to be here and I'm going to be your top producer in the company, that's your word. Mm-hmm. Like if we don't have our word, like what do we have, right? So the people that I've come across and that I have committed to and I've done things at high levels with, right? I'll just share with you one thing that I'll never forget. And I just love Ed Milet so much mm-hmm. for what he's done for me. He took me in at a time that I didn't even believe in myself.
Yeah.
And to say that he believed in me is an understatement. And when you can do that, and he did that for me, right? I'm not saying that, like, I work my ass off. But when you can have somebody that's there for you, and I'm tearing up because it really is an emotional conversation, but when someone really does care about you that much and believes in you and talks life into you, right? It's powerful. It's very powerful what one man can do, mm-hmm. right? Or one woman can do.
Mm-hmm, like Amberlee.
Like Amberlee. And it's powerful. So that being said, fast forward, what were the questions you had for me now? Sorry. I'm more of the emotional guy. And
No, I love it. Like, I mean, I want people to see, like, you're a very passionate guy. You do that in your work. You do that in the way that you love me. Like, you really put your all into the people you're around, into, you know, the effort you put in at work. You really give 100%, and it shows. And yeah, like, I'm really grateful for him in that moment too, because that was a low point in our lives, right? And your life. And it's so important to have those mentors and those people that believe in you. Like I said in the beginning, that when we don't believe in ourselves.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, back to, you know, what I was wanting also to go in is like, how did that all lead you to like what you're doing right now? And can you kind of tell people what you do now? Like, mm-hmm. give them some information on what you do now and
yep.
how you help people in that, and how you help people integrate their own passions and put you're the one pouring so much belief into so many other people that I watch.
So now what we do is we run in California, right? A large solar team. So we go out and we talk to people and we teach people how to talk to people, right? I believe it's a skill set that more people need nowadays. So we go out, we build leaders, we find people that want to be leaders. We build leaders, we work with leaders. And realistically, what we're after is, or what I like to find, is someone that's coachable. Someone that wants to be mentored, and someone that's open to coming into a blank slate and being mentored. So we run what we call a mentorship program. Our mentorship program is we bring people in and we show them, and it doesn't have to be going out and knocking on doors, but I like to go out and show people how to knock on doors, because mm-hmm. it really is a powerful way to teach people how to grow their asset, which is their mouthpiece. How do you go out and, you know, sales is the highest paying, literally the highest paying in any organization. It's sales is the highest paying job in any organization. And if you have the sales and you can control the appointment, you can control the company, right? If you have enough volume and you do that. So what we do is we basically go out and we build leaders. And on our platform, we also have what's called residual income. Mm-hmm. Right. So we have multiple products, right? Solar is one of the main products that we deal with, but we basically take people from high rate plans to low rate plans, and we help people financially, like, open up cash flow mm-hmm. because things are tight right now. So everybody thinks they're getting a great deal on their cell phones. Everybody thinks they're getting a great deal on their healthcare. So I go through and I analyze, hey, you're actually, like, our situation. We were paying over $2,000 a month for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and it ended up going, you know, we're paying now $620 a month, and I make 20% residual income every single month over and over and over. So what I do is I teach people, yes, you know, we got to go out and make sales, because it's, you know, you can make a lot of money in sales. But then once we're making, you know, money in sales, mm-hmm. we got to be able to invest our money wisely, put it into real estate, put it into different areas that ultimately are going to benefit us and our family. And then we have the residual side of it, which is, you know, we're going out showing people how to do work one time and making money over and over and over, which is not a 401k like my dad had, right? It's a 4001k that pays us over and over on these products that you're going to pay for the rest of your life anyways. So what, you might as well pay a little bit less and make additional income, like, for your family.
Yeah, makes sense.
So that's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I know that's what you do, but you do a lot more, like, when it comes to growing someone. I see you really transform people's lives, mm-hmm. right? Like, you pour belief into people. Is there, you know, for people that maybe feel like, you know, oh, like, I'm not good at that. Oh, I'm not, you know, I don't have what you have, you know, mm-hmm. I couldn't do that. Like, how do you bring someone from, like, that point to actually doing it and then them growing themselves as a leader.
Well, I mean, it really does have to, it boils down to some, like, the biggest success stories and the people that I've got the most success with are the people that are at a point where they're surrendering, just like myself. You know, when I gave up and I said, hey, God, show me the way, I believe that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
So good.
So I'm not trying to convince people. It might be for them. It might not be for them. Right. But at the end of the day, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So it's really finding people that essentially I'm looking for people who are looking for us. It's not the other way around. Right. Yeah. And recruiting is it's a timing business. Just because someone says, no, I'm not interested. I can tell you without a shadow of doubt, I've recruited hundreds of people that have told me no at one point, and then they hit me up later. They're like, dude, I see what you're doing. And man, I can't believe it. Like, show me what you guys are doing. I'm ready now. No is, you know, a lot of people think no is like, oh, beating your ego up. It's like, I can take a no just as easy as I can take a yes, right? Where are you at? Are you at a different place? And then they're like, you know what, Mike? 6 months later, I'm so sick of my boss. You know what? I'm going to do that part-time thing. Let's do this. And then my goal is to take them in, right? Is to get them a couple wins. Show them, hey, this is doable. I'm not going to say easy, because at the end of the day, nothing in life is easy.
Yeah.
But I'll show them how to do it. It really is.
And if it's easy, is it really that worth it?
Right. Right. And just understanding it's not going to be easy. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But if I set them up with that precedence, because I used to recruit all kinds of people and they would never stick. I would tell them it's going to be easy. And then they're like, you said this was going to be easy. And I'm like, well, it was easy for me.
you're a little special.
Right. So I tell them, I say, listen, this is going to be the hardest thing you'll ever have to do. But if you stick through it, it will be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I went to nursing school and that was so hard. Right. Yeah. And I mean, it was years of my life, you know? And so like, I always compare things to that. Right. Like, mm-hmm. And it's like what I do now too. It's like, as I step into new things, I'm like, I expect there to be time where I'm learning and growing and maybe I'm not the best at it, but I'm going to get better because I'm going to just stick to it, you know? Right. And I always think about that. Like when I became a nurse, I didn't become a nurse. Like here I am great at my job as a nurse. On day one, no, that's not how that works, right? Like we go to years of training. And so mm-hmm. like anytime you're starting something new, like be okay with the growth process, the learning process, with it being difficult, you know?
Right. Well, one other thing I'll add is it truly is a personal development and transformational company.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We bring people in and we show them the path. We help them with personal development, show them like the path, obviously. Teach them about mindset. We actually are putting our guys through a transformational academy. It's a 3-day. Mm-hmm. We bring them out of their element. And this is something that leaders know. People don't change their life in their current environment. They change their life when they get out of their environment, like the event we just went through. Touching the dream, seeing it, understanding it. And then it's like really, just like the police academy did for me, it broke me down.
Yeah.
Like if I didn't get broken down, what I talked about at the beginning of this podcast with that first week, and I love that we're talking about this, first week, 2 weeks of the police academy getting broken down, like to the point where I was so beat up. But because I didn't quit, I got to, right? I have a pension at 50 years old now when I turn 50 that it will pay me for the rest of my life. Because I didn't quit during the times of toughness.
Yeah.
So
we can relate that to relationships too, right?
Yeah.
Like we went through awful times, you guys. Like you can listen to it on the podcast. You can download the Truthful magazine that we have on the website, lifewithoutsecrets.com. And it shares a lot about our story as well on there. I mean, we went, like when you could think about hard times in a marriage, like we've probably been through it. Mm-hmm. And I feel, and I love to hear your opinion, but like, I feel like those hard times, although they're ugly and they're real low lows, we're on another level now.
For sure.
In our relationship, like when it comes to like understanding each other, growing together. And I feel like that really being that low made us transform as individuals. Especially myself as individuals, like you had that low point maybe sooner than I did, right? That's what created the transformation, I think, too.
Yeah. Well, there's two reasons usually that people will change. Mm-hmm. And the first one is pain, right? A pain that they never want to experience again. Second one is a pleasure. They're like, man, I just want to have that dream house and doing all this stuff. But for most people, it's that pain.
Yeah. So what motivates you to continue to strive for excellence and make a difference in others' lives every day? What continues to motivate you?
Watching people have their breakthroughs, watching people get vulnerable, watching people go, I didn't believe in myself, just like I didn't, you know, at times. Mm-hmm. And I told you got this, bro. I told you got this, right? And that's incredible. And then when we call it each one, teach one. You show one person how to do it, and their job is, I've shown you how to do it, you got to do it now, which is a huge ripple effect in today's world that can transform the world, that will transform mm-hmm. the world, that can and will affect 8.1 billion people on this planet if we all had that mentality of love on people, care mm-hmm. about people, be more Christ-like, be more loving. That's what motivates me.
I just was posting a picture of me and some of the women at the event, and powerful women just came to my mind. And what I thought of is like, know one, be one, lead one. That's like the key. And that's just like what you do as well. One last question on this topic, and then we're going to get to some fun questions between okay. us. Okay. okay. We're going to see how this goes.
Okay.
What advice would you give to our listeners who aspire to pursue their passions and build success?
Don't give up.
When it gets hard, just keep going.
God put that dream on your heart, right? And
especially if you have passion, like that's your key.
Yeah, don't give up. That's ultimately cool. What do they say? Winners never quit and quitters never win.
Yep. I want you to know my husband is really good at one-liners. So
winners never quit. Quitters never win.
If you ever need a one-liner, just have a conversation with him. Like, I feel like he's been coming up with one-liners through our whole relationship. Like, as soon as we met in Vegas. And like, I don't know, by the time we like started a relationship, he was already having one-liners about like everything in Vegas stays for Vegas except for her.
Everything that happens in Vegas stays there except for my wife.
Okay, so now we're gonna ask questions and we can go back and forth. So here, these are just fun questions that I thought like we would kind of like date night it out on our podcast tonight, right?
Okay, so
these are just questions. I have no idea what he's gonna say. Like, we didn't plan any of this podcast. This is just us free flowing over here.
Wait, you're asking a question, then I'm asking a question.
Right? You can, yeah.
Okay.
So here's my question.
Okay.
If you could relive one moment of our relationship, which would it be and why?
Ooh, relive one moment of our relationship. Oh, man. Does it have to be in the past?
Well, it says relive.
Okay. So I guess it has to come from the past. I'm like thinking about the future.
You're always very future oriented.
Okay.
But if you could relive one moment, like.
One of my favorite moments ever with you was in Pismo.
Which time?
When we just, it was our first date.
Oh, yeah.
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 Our first date when we just, that was a lot of fun.
That was when you didn't have to turn the crock pot on. That's what he's talking about. And if you guys have no idea what I'm talking about, you'll have to go listen to that episode from before.
She claims that we never did it more than one time, but
okay, let's move on to the next question here. This is a PG podcast, Mr. Riddell.
I'm sorry. You were talking about the crock
pot. Okay. Do you want to go a question or should I go to the next one?
I got a question. Sorry. Okay, here's my first question. If our relationship had a theme song, what would it be and why?
Oh my gosh. This is the one that comes to my mind first. We found love in a hopeless place by Rihanna.
Okay.
Because we met in Vegas. Right. But I also feel like, interestingly enough, I had to say something funny, but like on a deeper level, our wedding song couldn't have been more perfect. And I don't feel like it was like super traditional wedding song. Mm-hmm. If I can remember right, I don't remember it being, but maybe it was. Mm-hmm. And it's I Won't Give Up by Jason Mraz. Mm-hmm. And that's what we danced to at our wedding. And I didn't know, like we had been through a lot at that point to even get to the wedding, obviously, because we were already going through like those difficult moments and times. And everything in our relationship even at that point, but like I don't think we knew like how much we would really need that song, right? Yeah. Like, and you were just talking about what is the key? Don't give up, right?
Yeah.
And that is the same song that I think is really our theme song.
Yeah.
I Won't Give Up, you know.
By Jason Mraz.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. Okay.
So, yeah. They said get married. They said have kids. It would fix it all. Didn't fix any of it.
We already had kids at that point. Okay, this is going to be a funny one.
Okay.
What is the most annoying thing about me, but you love me anyway?
She's a control freak.
Okay, you got me.
But I love her, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm an analyzer. I like to analyze everything.
She likes to have a lot of control, and it's okay.
He's given me that, but I think we can communicate about it now.
Yeah.
And he loves me anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, though. He says that, but then he also tells me, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Just don't let me guess.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I'm a man and my mind is simple.
Okay. What's your question? You have another question for me?
Okay. I got another question for you. Yes. What's one thing you've learned from me that has changed the way you view the world?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things. You know, I really think it is the amount of possibilities there are in the world. I grew up, you know, watching my mom work really hard and she had the same routine every day, you know, and I grew up really in like a survival mode. And that's how I lived a lot of my life. Like, you know, I grew up and I became a nurse because I loved it. Obviously I volunteered in the ER, but I also chose it because I knew it was a stable job that would pay my bills as a single mother. Because I was raised by a single mother and my mother taught me never to depend on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew I could provide for myself. And I also knew that I could work 3 days a week and I could show up to my kids' performance if I wanted to. You know, and those were two things that were really important to me. But I think that what you showed me is that like life can look different and you can still have those things. You can still have that security. You can still show up to your kids' performance, you know, and you've really provided that for me and the view of the world and just shown me like really what is possible. Like I've watched you just go after anything, right? Like you're so good at pivoting and I am one that is like cringes with change or used to. And now it's like, let me see what I can do next. Right? Like it's like this, like you've poured that into me and you have been my biggest supporter in every single step I've taken. And you've given that to me. It's been a really big, huge gift.
Love you too.
Okay. We're getting all mushy now, so we need to start.
I guess I better ask a more funny question next. Go ahead. Last question or one more for each of us?
Let's think of if you could choose one word to describe our relationship, what would it be?
Ooh,
and why?
One word. Resilient.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, it depends on your definition, but absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say,
I'm going to say why.
Okay.
We've made it through the unthinkable.
Mm-hmm.
And crazy enough, just with resilience in life, if you have it.
Everybody has it.
Everybody's
capable of.
Yeah. Everybody's capable of having it. But I would say the word would be resilient for sure.
Yeah.
I think that that's a big word for me. And the reason is because of just how incredible the other side has become.
Yeah. And here's why our relationship is resilient. Because I really want people to understand this. Because a lot of people think resilience means that like it's just because we pushed through and that we were strong. And that's actually not what it means to be resilient. Resilience is having the energy to prepare for, adapt, or recover from an adversity or a struggle or a challenge in your life. And the reason why we built that resilience is because we began pouring into ourselves and our relationship, right? When we hit those rock bottom moments. And that's what made us resilient. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Well, can I finish with the last question?
Yeah.
Okay. So since you took my question, like literally that was my last question. It was the exact same question. What I would say, and I would ask you, is what is one of your big, hairy, audacious goals at the moment?
Ooh, hairy, huh?
Can you share with somebody?
Does it have to be hairy? It
doesn't have to be hairy. Be smooth.
Okay. I have so many now. Well, first of all, I want to help as many couples as I can. I want to walk them through the program that I've created because it has really transformed our relationship, and I want people, other people and other couples to know that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that especially in our marriage, you know, we go to the grocery store, we go down to the neighbors, we go to our friends, we go to work, and we put on a smile, and then we come home and we close the doors at the end of the day. And that's where our secrets are, right? Where we're really struggling in our marriage or with something else, you know? And I think it's the number one thing is the marriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that's married, it can be, and in different ways. And I don't think that's what marriage is meant for. I know that's not what marriage is meant for, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that like marriage is hard work and like, but I want you to have the tools, right? Like we didn't have the tools. We both came from broken families and we just weren't given the tools. Mm-hmm. And we came in with our grief cases, you know? And so I want to teach you how to unpack your grief case, and I want to do it with your spouse and show you how to dive deeper and communicate on another level and really listen to the essence of what each other is saying. Mm-hmm. And really start working on that and doing the hard work and growing, right? Like mm-hmm. you're saying, like if you're at a really tough spot in your relationship, maybe that's your transformation point, right? Are you ready to transform that point? Are you sick of struggling?
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired?
Yeah. Or like you don't even have the energy to show up for your relationship anymore. Is that what you really want? You know, so one that is like a big passion and like something I feel like in my heart from what we've gone through and what I know. And, you know, I'm also, you know, certified to teach different things now. And I've kind of combined it all to create this program that it's science backed as well. Because I'm a nerd.
A nurse.
Not a nerd. I'm a nerd too. So yeah, I think that's my goal. That's my audacious goal. Like I want to help people in that.
I love that.
Yeah. So, well, this has been amazing. I cannot believe we've already been talking for an hour. That went by really fast.
It's midnight now.
Right. Well, thank you for coming on, for getting vulnerable with us. I really wanted to highlight you and just tell you how grateful I am just for you and for how you've led our family.
Love you.
Love you too. Let us know what you think of this episode. Go ahead and go to my website, lifewithoutsecrets.com, and you can go ahead and download our free magazine, The Truthful Magazine. And until next time, keep chasing those goals and never give up on what you're passionate about.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Life Without Secrets. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Once again, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.